tweet at TodaySOR.
With me now in studio, one of the most influential women in the country, Josephine Feely, is, for the next month anyway, chairman of the Revenue Commissioners, though her leave entitlements mean that her last day behind the desk at Revenue will be on Christmas Eve. She was the first woman appointed to the role of chair, and in her 7 years at the top, she has overseen many changes. And in the new year, she starts another big job. She will be head of the Independent Policing Authority, a position which, once established, will mean many changes for An Garda Síochána. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. You've been in and out of the headlines quite a bit, but looking back on your 7 years as chairman of Revenue, what stands out most?
I suppose what stands out most was the stark feeling towards the second half of 2008 of the problems that the country was in and the importance of the job that Revenue had to do at one side, if you like, of the balance sheet. About 94% of government income comes through Revenue. And if we didn't do our jobs, even in austerity, then there'd be nothing for anybody else to spend on schools and hospitals and welfare and so on. So that sort of moment of the emergency budget in September 2008 when I got a call from finance, that one sticks in my mind, I must say.
With all the provisions. But did you have a sense, maybe much earlier than that, when you saw the revenue streams?
Yes.
The tax streams. When did you see it yourself?
Well, I can remember being in the studio here talking to John Murray the week I was appointed. And I said, I thought we would have to begin to retrain our staff to manage debt in a different way that they hadn't done for a while. So we could already see businesses in trouble and we could see the revenue streams beginning to soften.
Do you want to put a month and a year on that?
Well, I suppose that when I was in talking to Sean, it was March 2008, and he was asking me about changes ahead, and I said we could see that. And I suppose the revenues had already started to soften between 2007.
Did you envisage anything like the carnage then that followed?
Not at that point, no.
What about, I suppose people feel that they were at the pin of their collar to try and pay all their bills, the revenue indeed, as well as a central or key part of that. Would there be times when people would have accused you of being heartless?
Well, certainly we got a lot of correspondence to that effect. But in the scheme of things, taking account of sort of 2 million people in the labour force, 2.2 million taxpayers, it was very modest, I must say. And I suppose the other thing that sticks out for me in the 7 years is the huge response from the Irish taxpayer, because our compliance rates held very solid. People paid, people filed. We put in place arrangements for businesses that needed time to pay. And that proved very, very successful. I mean, at any given time, we'd have about 125 million of debt under restructuring, under special arrangements. And certainly, I can't recall any significant complaints from the business organisations, for example. So clearly, we were doing something right in that space.
So in other words, you were prepared to give people latitude, to give them a bit of a breathing space, provided they cooperated?
Provided they came to us before we came to them, engage with us, open the books, tell us what their problems were. We had time to pay arrangements in place, and certainly, and most of the businesses that went into those arrangements came out the other end and went on to perform profitably.
Would there be others, though, you would take one look at the books and you'd know it was a hopeless case?
Of course. Yeah, of course. And in those cases, you know, we have a duty to be fair, and fairness at the level of the individual taxpayer is one thing. But fairness at the level of the class of taxpayers meant that sometimes we had to say, I'm sorry, but the business down the road that's competing with you is paying their taxes. So sometimes you have to say this one just is not for saving.
It would be giving them an unfair advantage
over a
law-abiding competitor or rival.
Precisely, who's paying their taxes. Yeah.
How often would that situation arise?
Oh, that would arise regularly enough, yeah.
The other thing, I suppose, well, among the things that drew you into controversy, I suppose, there was a famous or infamous letter to pensioners a couple of years ago where you had discovered that some people hadn't declared their state pensions and that they had underreported their obligations. Mm. Now, that caused a certain amount of angst for which you apologised, but you did collect quite a sizable amount of money on the back of it.
Yes, we did. And I mean, I suppose that goes back to my opening comments. We found ourselves in November 2011, became aware very late in the year that there was a lot of money available here. government was struggling to create a budget. We had a responsibility to say to them, there's 45 million that you can put into the budget arithmetic from this project. In the event, we collected 65 million on an annual basis from that project every year since, and about another 35 in arrears. So it was unpleasant, and I again was sorry for the way we handled it, but our job was to collect the tax. And most of the people were earning 40 and 50,000 in other pensions on top of the state pension.
It was extraordinary, though, that it went on clearly for years and years without you rumbling it.
I think, we knew that there was an issue, and we had been asking the Department of Social Protection for a while to give us the data. We didn't expect the extent of it. There's no doubt about that. I think taxpayers, on the other hand, pensioners, thought that they, genuinely, I think a lot of them thought the state pension was tax-free.
Or so that the state knows if it's entitled to a shake of this money, well, they'll take it anyway. They don't need me to tell them.
Something like that. I mean, we weren't as equipped for sharing data as we are now. So everything is shared now between ourselves and the Department of Social Protection on a weekly basis. So,
and again, the other controversy that you had to handle was when the collecting of the local property tax was given over to Revenue because they were struggling to do it at local authority level. Again, you talked about a high compliance rate. Now, what is the rate for the property tax at this stage?
Well, for it's 95% compliance for 2013 and 2014. And this year's campaign is underway. We're already up at 45 or 46% for this year. And my colleagues will kill me if I don't remind people that they should pay their local property tax by the 7th of January or before Christmas, of course, if they want to get it out of the way.
Given the efficiency with which you brought to bear on the property tax, was there ever a question of you being given responsibility for the collection of the water charges as well?
No. I mean, water is a utility. We collect tax. We understand how to design taxes. I don't know anything about pipes or leaks. And the revenue organisation
has
no competence. We have no competence in relation to utilities. It's a different model. Yeah, but we're good at collecting money. Yeah.
But if the government had come to you and said, look, we're in a hole here, we have to stop digging, or at least we need somebody to help us out of it, you have the expertise, are you saying you couldn't have done anything for them?
Oh, look, Revenue will always do what the government asks. I've said to many ministers down the years, just give us a bit of time and give us some resources and Revenue can do most things.
Now, again, most recently you were in the Dáil in the Public Accounts Committee dealing with, among other things, the Ansbacher accounts and that controversy, which included accusations that Revenue had neglected to fully investigate claims. Now, you hit back fairly robustly and said, look, you investigated everything. But in the midst of all that controversy, there were individuals who were named in the Dáil, and I know we don't necessarily want to go into the politics of it, but they seem to have been left in a situation where they couldn't prove a negative and you couldn't help them.
Yeah, I think that's fair, a fair comment. But taxpayer confidentiality is extraordinarily important. And I think if you referenced Irish Water there a few minutes ago, the sensitivity people had about PPSNs in relation to water, can you imagine how that would be amplified in relation to the sensitivity about taxpayer information? So we have a legal provision that forbids us from talking about taxpayers. It's a criminal offence if we do. Things can be done by consent from time to time, but it's very, very rare and I wouldn't encourage it.
Well, if an individual who felt they were unfairly maligned wanted to somehow at least set the record straight, would you be in a position to offer them a tax compliance cert, for instance?
Well, tax clearance certificate is a device that's used. Yeah, it's about telling them that as of today, their tax affairs are in order. We can say things like that. But that relates to today. It doesn't relate to history. The whole episode in relation to Ansbacher, and I do have to clarify that allegations about Revenue's effectiveness or otherwise, I never actually received those allegations. I never received that dossier. I never received those allegations from the officer in question. What I confirmed to the Public Accounts Committee was that all of the papers that we got from the Minister for Enterprise and Employment and now called Jobs and Innovation, and all of the cases that we unearthed ourselves, that the authorised officer sent us in his report, and that the High Court Inspector sent us in their reports, that all of those had been investigated wherever they took us. But I never had access, and I still haven't, to said dossier.
Would you welcome the provision of it to your successor, or at least the relevant officials?
We'll receive information from anybody who wants to give it to us all at the time.
Why did you think it didn't come your way?
I have no idea. I discussed that at the committee. They seemed equally confused, or perplexed. But the dossier has been the subject of, you know, some legal discussions as well. So perhaps that's got something to do with it.
Do you think there might be another pot of Ansbacher money to be garnered for the taxpayer?
I doubt it very, very much. To the extent, in terms of our own work, we had very considerably more powers than the authorised officer. We unearthed very considerably more documents, and we followed all of them to the end. There's still half a dozen cases that are not settled. Some of those are the subject of appeals at the moment. So there is a modest amount of money still to be collected. We got settlements from the banks in question in relation to dirt. So I doubt very much that there's any kind of hidden pot of gold there.
I mentioned earlier how you were one of the most influential women in the country. I don't think there would be any disagreement with that. But you're somebody who, I think, you've researched the whole question of gender equality or gender balance in the public service. Mm. And maybe you might like to share some of the conclusions you've drawn from that.
Well, I've always been part of all of the civil service reform programmes. And one of those, I was asked to lead some research in this area. And I mean, essentially what was happening at the time was we had lots of diversity in the civil service, but it's all clustered from the middle down. And so the conclusions were that we needed to take some active measures to ensure that we increased the female representation in middle and senior management grades in order to have women available for top management. I suppose my interest in this as well is not just because of a feminist outlook that I do have, but also public service. It's really important that it's not homogenous. It's very important. It's possibly more important than it is in other sectors. And so leaders and opinion formers and policymakers do need to bring different perspectives to bear. So I think it's important that there should be women. So in any event, what we have to do and continue to do is to make sure that women participate at the middle and senior management levels. And to do that, you need role models. You need to make sure that you understand and remove any barriers to participation. And then once they participate, they come through.
But it's 40 years now, I think, since the marriage bar was removed, since there was equal pay for equal work as a result of us joining the European Union. So what is holding things back at this stage?
The residue of the marriage bar, the researchers found, now that was 10 years ago, was still affecting the numbers. Seniority promotion was another huge barrier, because clearly if you've got a cohort of men and they keep getting promoted on seniority, it's very difficult to break in. Opening up removing that, because I mean that's gone now this long time, and opening up recruitment at different levels has hugely improved the gender balance at, say, assistant principal, principal officer level, especially in revenue. So I'm very pleased about that.
It's hard to generalise, but in your experience and maybe your personal experience, are women maybe reticent about putting themselves forward for promotion?
Well, this is something in the literature. It's nothing specific about Ireland or the civil service, that women tend to self-select out when they see a long list of requirements for a post, to a greater degree than men do. And that's why you have to intervene with focus groups and with reassurance and with role models and with practical supports to make sure that women know that that they should be in there competing. If they're in competing, they will win.
Now, you have just completed, I think, 41 years of service.
Right.
And as a public servant, you could, as it were, head off into the sunset with a big lump sum and a pension, but you have chosen another route. And Francis Fitzgerald, the Minister for Justice, recently named you as the incoming or the chairperson designate for the Independent Policing Board or Policing Authority. Let's hear what she had to say when she announced you to that position just a few weeks ago.
I don't think anybody doubts her independence. She's years of experience of managing complex organisations, an organisation that the public has to have trust in. And that's what's going to be important in the new policing authority. The eight members will be appointed through the public appointment service. And I believe it's the responsibility of government to appoint the very best person. I believe we've done that. And she will work on the transitional issues, moving the responsibility for policing and the accountability into a more public, transparent arena.
Now, you've emerged in this position because you availed of a procedure whereby you could express interest in taking on this role. Why did you decide that?
As I mentioned earlier, Sean, I've been involved in lots and lots of reform in the public sector in work way back, work groups and focus groups and all the rest of it. This is an amazing reform, first time since the foundation of the state. So I kind of asked myself if it was in a few months' time, would I like it? And I would. So I said, OK, let's have a go. It's an opportunity to continue to contribute to the reform of the Irish public institutions. The independence point that the minister made, I think, is something that resonates with me, because I'm very proud of the fact that during my chairmanship in revenue, we confirmed the independence of the revenue commissioners in law. And I think that was always a convention that was observed by government. But it's important that certain institutions have that perception of independence. Staff and revenue are sick of listening to me talking about the importance of public confidence in our institution in revenue. And I think the same extends to the police. So I thought I could bring some of that revenue learning to bear.
You bring a lot of, obviously, as Francis Fitzgerald affirmed there, a lot of credibility based on your experiences and so forth. But how big a job has to be done to improve the credibility and the standing of the guards?
Well, I'll tell you that maybe in 6 months or a year's time. I mean, we've seen the inspector's report. It's the size of a phone book. And I can't confess to have read it all at this stage, but I've obviously read the issues. There's a roadmap there. There's a lot of work to be done, a huge amount of work to be done.
And you are going to be, the commissioner is going to be responsible to you and your authority, you and the eight others, for matters of policing. She will be responsible to the Minister for Justice for matters of security. Mm. But how much independence, how much authority is going with this new role?
Well, the legislation is only published in heads form at this stage. So until the ROCTIS has had its say on the legislation, I'd be reluctant to get into how much independence or what the independence will entail. But clearly it's envisaged that it will be independent in relation to certain senior appointments, in holding the commissioner to account in a quite a public fashion a number of times a year for her performance.
Quarterly meetings public.
So the heads of the bill provide for, yeah, that sounds like.
How would that work?
I have no idea, but I'll find out. I mean, I'll work it out. I mean, that's one of the attractions of the post. It's a startup. It's new. And there's an opportunity to put in place different ways of doing things.
Yes, but if you have to have these quarterly meetings, and that comes around very, very frequently, as I know from the JNLR figures, you know, you're subject to these public tests, as it were, and they're always around the corner. But, you know, it's hard to imagine that on matters which require, obviously, with policing, you're talking about stuff that can be highly sensitive, that it can be subject to, you know, sub judice rules and all the rest of it, that you'll have to, if you're going to have a public session, presumably the real work will be done in a private rehearsal beforehand.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, those of us that are used to going to the Public Accounts Committee with taxpayer confidentiality preventing us, and indeed sub judice rules quite often in tax cases as well, you spend 3 or 4 hours there in get under public scrutiny without breaching those lines quite safely. So I think we'll work it out.
It's a very interesting model to be introducing, because I think it's the first time that a public agency will have to be responsible or answerable to its governing authority in this fashion, in an open way. Yeah. Do you think it might be extended?
I have no idea. I mean, the policy decision behind this were decisions made by the minister and government. They've designed the model based on experience in other countries. So I'm looking forward to trying to make it happen.
Yeah, but how important is it, though, to get, to use that awful cliche, buy-in from the ordinary guard on the beat or in the squad car or whatever? Because as we know, there seems to be a wariness of outsiders, if you're talking about GSOC or whatever, bordering on distrust, and that's possibly putting it mildly. So how do you cut through that?
Oh, well, I think that, first of all, I have noticed that a number of the Garda unions have welcomed the appointment of the authority and the putting in place of the authority. So clearly the door is open there and their minds are open to having an authority put in place. So we'll work from there.
OK, well, as the Minister said, you will be the public face for transparency, accountability and openness. Josephine Feely, good luck,
Sean,
with that job.
Before I go, I want to say something for the record. I hope you don't mind. I really want to pay tribute to the staff and revenue that supported me over the last 7 years. They've done an enormous job for the country and I want to thank them.
And you had to do it with reduced numbers, I think, over
reduced numbers. 14% less staff than when I started. It's costing 20% less to run revenue, and they're doing a great job.
And just a more fuckle score, you always referred and wanted to be referred to as the chairman of revenue. I'm not quite sure why that was, but will you be the chairman of the new independent policing
It'll
authority
be whatever
as well?
Is provided in the legislation now. I'm okay. afraid I don't playing get to choose.
It, playing it by the book as ever, Josephine Feely, outgoing chairman of the revenue and chairperson designate of the new independent policing authority. Thank you very much indeed for coming to the studio.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.